Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Woj Pod. Get the inside scoop on all the biggest NBA news as the biggest names in the game join ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski for the Woj Pod, featuring in-depth conversations, breaking news reaction and analysis, and coverage of the biggest events on the NBA calendar, as well as an occasional deep dive into some of the most notable events in NBA history. The playoffs are here, so be sure to check it out. Follow the Woj Pod as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, The Ultimate Fighter, the reality show that brings top MMA prospects together under one roof to compete for a UFC contract, is back. Stream the season premiere on Tuesday, June 1st, only on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live. Check him out on First Things First on FS1, 7:30, 9:30.
You got it. You nailed it. You see, 6:30, 9:30, pandemic timing, 7:30 to 9:30. We'll see if we get back the extra hour. I'll be honest. I'm good with the 2 hours. Good with a little extra hour of sleep. It's no problem. How's it going, Bo?
Dude, Nick, I am good. That is, in fact, Nick Wright. I can't imagine, though, that I am as good as you are, given that at the time of this recording, we are coming off simultaneous, like literally simultaneous, Laker win, Clipper loss.
Oh, so good. It was so good. It makes me so happy. Do you have a preference where we start between the two?
Nah, let's see where you go.
Let's start with the Clippers then. Oh, man. Rank these three decisions from the worst to the least worst. Okay, decision one. Kawhi Leonard coming off a championship as options. Stay in Toronto, defend your title with that organization and team. Go home to Los Angeles, play with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and win more titles. Or go play with the worst organization in NBA history and extort them into giving up all their young players and draft picks for Paul George. That's choice one. Choice two was the Los Angeles Clippers in game 72 saying, well, we're guaranteed not to have the Lakers, but we want to avoid them for so long. We are going to opt in to playing Luka rather than the Portland Trail Blazers, who we are 6-0 against since acquiring Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. And choice three was signing with New Balance. Where are those decisions? How do we rank them? Because I think they're all pretty terrible.
Yeah, I think the second decision is probably proven to be the worst, like setting up for this game against Dallas. Because, you know, I have not been on the same program with Luka as literally everybody else in my industry. And the reason was the dude was out here shooting 7, 8, 9 threes a game at 30%, like low 30s. Like, I felt like we were just ignoring this giant thing. Well, he's not doing that anymore. He is hitting those threes, which means he is now the player that people were saying that he was before. And moments like these, he's built for until something happens and he loses his mind and he goes over to the sideline to cry about it for a little while. But the Clippers decided they wanted to go in and play against that. That proved to be not so great an idea. Actually, going to the Clippers, okay. It is a terrible organization, right? But I have felt that since they got Donald Sterling out of there, like we got to kind of have a BSAS situation, right? Like I felt like we had to kind of throw that in there. So I didn't think it was that terrible just because if I were Kawhi Leonard, I wouldn't want to play with LeBron James either. Because what we're learning about Anthony Davis, you tell me if I'm wrong here, he is a number one talent who's probably better built to be a number two player. Kawhi Leonard ain't trying to be nobody's number two, and I can understand why he don't want to. Because big playing with LeBron come with a whole lot of stuff. Like, we got people in our industry who are great at this job that we don't necessarily want to do shows with, right? Like, it might be, like, our friends, where we're like, I don't know about that.
There's no question about that. I think that's a totally fair point. I also think that he could have stayed in Toronto for one more year and tried to defend the title. Yeah. I just think tying yourself to Paul George maybe he's not tied. Because he can leave, though.
I don't think he's leaving.
Well, then Paul George might be on his way out.
Now we're talking about something different. The reason I don't think he's leaving is if this dude wanted to live in San Diego so bad that he will commute from L.A. to San Diego every day to go to work, then I think he's going to stay where he is. Like, I think that was a lifestyle decision. Now, Paul George, I was talking to Vinny about this the other day. What if Paul George is really a number three dressed like a number two?
He is.
But he's just talented enough to actually make you believe he could be a number one at points, right? But he's talented enough that you feel like, man, we should get a little more out of him. But if all Paul George was ever told to do, show up, play defense, and hit three-pointers, we would spend all our time talking about what a great player Paul George is, because he would be not as good a shooter as Klay Thompson, but a better defender than Klay Thompson.
Yep.
And you see the way that we talk about Klay Thompson, right? It's universal love for Klay Thompson. But man, he just can't be the dude that you lean on. Like, you can't be like, hey, yo, Paul, we're going to need 35. He can get you 35, but not because you told him you needed it.
Well, and last night he was good. Kawhi played the best half of his life. Listen, his body, I don't know if it will ever be right. Like, he's 29, but somewhat, I don't want to say broken down, but he's just not a guy. It's like, hey, we're going to need you for 44 minutes, both ends. But Kawhi still scored 41. The problem for the Clippers last night is, and this was the point I was making last year, and everyone said I was a hater and wrong. And then nobody acknowledged it because Paul George was so bad at the end of that series. It's not a good roster. People are like, correct, oh my God, what happened? Kawhi scored all these points. Paul George scored all these points. Yeah, but you're playing Reggie Jackson 30 minutes. Nick Batum is in crunch time. Nick Batum was the worst player on the Hornets. You gave Luke Kennard $60 million to not play. You gave Marcus Morris $64 million, forgetting he's Marcus Morris. Ibaka got 5 minutes last night. Zubac can't defend. Beverly can't play offense. Like, it's not a great roster. Everyone's like, oh, they're so switchable. Yes, they have all these wings, but they have no bigs and no point guard.
Yeah.
It's a problem.
Well, last year, Kawhi Leonard was the playmaker. Like, I was like, yo, he's not a guy that you ask to make all the shots and make all the passes. Like, it can't be that. I'd actually rather Paul George be the playmaker if you're going to do that, except you got to put the ball in Paul George's hands too much. Like, no, their roster is absolutely poorly constructed. That, I think, number one for them is, regardless of what happens with Kawhi and Paul George, somebody's got to be out there to get other people's shots. And every player on their roster looks for his own shot every time he gets the ball. Every single one.
Yep. And none of them, to go back to Luka, usually when the media thinks one thing and you are very divergent from it, I'm usually one of the few people alongside you. Like, you and I are typically outside the mainstream on the same type of things. Luka has not been the case. Luka and Jokic, you and I vehemently disagree on. And Luka, I'm one of the people that picked him for MVP. I'm one of the people, I did pick Lakers, Mavs, my conference finals before the year started. And the thing with Luka is, and what you're seeing, and this is why, I mean, who's my favorite player ever? LeBron. Who's my second favorite player in the league? Luka. Why? They play the same game. Now, Luka's not above the rim explosive, but it is, I will just either get an easy shot for myself or create the most wide open three imaginable. And I just, the way he controls the game, and this is the thing that's, to me, so exciting about the Mavs going to win this series. Luka's played 8 playoff games. He averages 31, 10, and 10 in those 8. They've all been against a team with the best wing defenders in basketball. Like, what will Luka look like in a playoff series where he, last year and this year, the only playoffs he's ever played, it's been Kawhi, Paul George, Marcus Morris, those guys. So what will he look like if in the next round they are playing Utah, who has Rudy, but doesn't have, like, the great wing defenders otherwise? So I think that that is equal part storyline. Is Luke is going toe-to-toe with Kawhi and has been better through 2 games.
So I think we got a couple of interesting things there. One, I think Kawhi Leonard's body is not discussed nearly enough, and I think it is in much worse shape than anybody wants to acknowledge, because they don't call what they did with him last year load management. They talk about that as, like, injury maintenance. There's something that is going to forever not be right with him. Like, the thing that happened in San Antonio, there's something physically not great with him, but I think that he and Paul George, guys get old and we don't pay attention to it, but very few guys play truly elite defense like past the age of 27, 28. Like, this is the decline on those guys being those things. Where I got frustrated on the Luka thing in part was, yes, Luka did all these things against the Clippers, but it's the same Clippers that you poo-poo. So we can only give him but so much credit.
Yes.
Like, on one hand, the Clippers can't be what you say the Clippers are, and then we give bonus points for achieving against the Clippers.
even I can acknowledge what they are supposed to have is great wing defenders. Like, yeah. That's what they have a surplus of. To me, they built a team, and the reason I wasn't high on them last year was they built a team seemingly to stop LeBron, forgetting that that team employs Anthony Davis.
Right.
If you get there, you got four guys to switch on LeBron and Zubac to guard AD. Now, right. They didn't get there. And do you think this series is over? Because I think it's over. I think the Clippers are dead.
I feel like it's over. I'm leaning toward over with them on that. Like, it's just the Clippers, man. Like, our producer on TV sent me a text over the weekend, and he was just like, God, they're such losers. And that's the harshest thing that you can say about anybody, right? That they are just losers. But I don't have a counterpoint, except, like, Kawhi wasn't a loser. Paul George wasn't even a loser before he got there. Ty Lue, not a loser. They have a series of guys who demonstrated to us that in previous locations, they were not losers. And then they come together and form this Voltron loser down there after giving up the world to make it happen. I thought they should have made all those moves in order to try to bring this thing together. But now they're here. And so another place you and I are in different places is with Daryl Morey. And while I think Morey is not bad at his job, right? I have strong criticisms of him. And one of them is I never thought he ever got the people part right of basketball, right? Like, I think that he would view this game and come up with all these things on paper. Like, that's how you wind up bringing in Ty Lawson, for example.
No, that's a fair critique.
But the Clippers are absolutely on the wrong side of the people part. Because the thing about Kawhi Leonard, what do you do when your best player don't talk, right? Like, your best player does need to either be vocal or be Steph Curry, right? Where I'm going to do everything I'm supposed to do and this lead by example thing is going to happen. Kawhi Leonard out here showing up late all the time and everything else. Like, the Clippers never seem like a team that's together. Like, LeBron's teams all always seem like they're together, right? Even though I don't even know how much them dudes like him. They all seem like the teams are together. The Clippers just look like a bunch of dudes out here playing basketball.
Well, that's the part where, and then people will be like, well, then how do you win championships before? It's like, well, the Spurs had the culture of Pop and Duncan and Ginobili and Parker. And when Kawhi got there, 15 years of 50 plus wins and four championships already in the bank. The Raptors were building a culture. Lowry was vocal. And two things got the Raptors over the hump. Kawhi and LeBron left the conference. So they had two things going for him there. And then he goes to L.A. I don't think you have to have your best guy be your leader and vocal guy, but you have to have one of your top two or three be that.
Right.
I don't know if Shaq, Kobe, I don't know who, it was probably more Kobe than Shaq, at least later on. But Kobe was awesome, right? So it was okay. In Golden State, to your point, Draymond was that team, and he was their second or third best player, depending on how you valued him before they got Kevin Durant. When people are like, oh, the leader of the Clippers is going to be Beverly. No, it can't be.
No.
That can't happen. Your leader can't be bad. Your leader maybe doesn't have to be amazing, but he can't be bad. And Bo, they're just so stuck. If before Kawhi opts in, I looked it up this morning, they're at 100 million. Next year, Paul George, Zubac, Kennard, Marcus Morris, Beverly, Rondo. 100 million for those six. So you can't trade. You're like literally not allowed to trade the few first round picks you have left because you've traded them in the alternating years. So this is just your team. And you know, you got Ballmer having a conniption every time they get a layup and about to break ground on this new arena. You've got these embarrassing billboards, and you're 7-8 in 15 playoff games now. 7-8.
See, I got two things on that. Like, one with Kawhi, the more I think about it, what bothers me about Kawhi and the leadership thing is, if you don't want to be responsible for anybody else, that's fine. Then you better be at work on time every single day. Pay the cost to be the boss, right? Like, if you want to be the boss, this is the cost you have to pay it. And if it's just not in you, then it's just not in you, but you got to be on it on every single thing that you do otherwise. Like, I have a great frustration for the people who want all the spoils of being that guy, but don't understand that you don't get anything for free, right? Like, that's my one thing. The other thing, you mentioned Ballmer. Here's something I feel like we forget about Steve Ballmer. Yeah, he was the CEO of Microsoft, but he wasn't very good at it. Like, when you go back and read the way that people looked at his time, like, Microsoft not really jumping on and getting on right as the internet blew up and became what it was, that happens on Steve Ballmer's watch. Like, he is a better owner than the guy they had before. And good God, he's worth $70 billion. So he's got all the money in the world. But he ain't necessarily a great owner. He's just a rich owner and better by basis of comparison. I think I probably would have made the same all-in move if it was what was going to get me Kawhi Leonard at the time that they got Kawhi Leonard. I probably would have done that. But I got no reason to have any actual faith that they're going to be able to figure out how to do this from here. And something that people need to get, if you're not familiar with Los Angeles very much, I can't tell you this enough. You out there enough to pick up on this point. The Clippers are just in LA. They ain't got no foothold.
Right. That's why he was giving out backpacks to kids when they got Kawhi. Because, first of all, sports LA is not a great sports town as far as, like, you and I both come from the sports radio world.
Right.
I used to work in Houston. In Houston, if you had a show that was a radio show that was in the top 10, it's a great success. If you're in Boston, Chicago, Philly, if your show is in third place amongst all radio shows, you're losing to the other sports station. LA is far closer to Houston than those Northeast cold cities as far as how much people are diehard sports fans. But even if you whittle it down to just sports fans, Lakers, Dodgers, USC football, then like UCLA basketball, and now LA Rams, how far down the list do you got to go? Like, are the Clippers ahead of the Anaheim Angels? Yes. But that might be it. And the other thing is this, they're not super likable. Like, it's not like they have a team that people are going to gravitate towards to because of the personalities.
Now, see, I question whether they're over the Anaheim Angels, because at least the Angels have Anaheim and Anaheim is big, right? Places where you have, so Chicago, for example, where you got two baseball teams. They serve two different places, though, right? The north side and the south side of Chicago.
That's right.
Are different places. And that was the thing the Clippers always messed up on, was they should have moved to Anaheim who knows how long ago so they could get their own place. And so in LA, if you go play for the Clippers, you're a dude in the NBA. Like, something similar is the case here in New York, except there is, like, I think, an enthusiasm from a certain class of people in Brooklyn to try to make the Nets into a thing, right? But at least they got their own geography. But this is a Knicks city. It will always be a Knicks city because they grew up with the Knicks. The Clippers been in LA for 40 years, but it's been 40 years of sorry. Like, why in the world, if you were from LA, my buddy Lance, for whatever reason, Lance is Clipper Nation. He got t-shirts and everything else. And I'm not signing up for losers. That's just not what it is. And that's back when they were definitely losers.
Yeah, I think maybe for a lot of those folks, you know, it's, you could get tickets to them, you couldn't get tickets to the Lakers, or you were trying to zig to zag, you know, it was like a rebellion against your father who was a Lakers fan, whatever it is. But it's not because I have these great fond memories. It's not because, like, man, I just got to tell you, I loved watching them growing up. No, you didn't. They were terrible. Pick the era, they were terrible. They were always terrible. Given what's happened to the Clippers, even though it looks like at the moment, LeBron cannot turn the corner, and he is clearly not trying to go into the paint and risk turning his ankle at the moment. I look at the West and I'm like, who's going to be the second best team alive in round two? Like, what's the Lakers' path to the championship going to be? I think the finals are going to be a monster, and I think the path to the finals are going to be a cakewalk.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training. Just in time for summer and warmer days. I've been in the gym a little bit trying to get my fitness in check so I can break these skinny allegations I keep getting. And spring is the best time of the year to take a new look at your fitness routine, dial it up a notch, and continue powering on. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row, or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout. Whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance, Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals while challenging yourself at every level. Now you can catch up on your favorite NBA games with NBA League Pass while you push yourself to new levels of fitness. Watch your favorite games and win your workouts with NBA League Pass on Peloton and visit onepeloton.com. Peloton All Access membership and NBA League Pass subscription required. I was all in on these Nuggets, right? I am still rather bullish on the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah.
However, I have to admit, I have been watching them as I could because they play their games late, but I'm not sure how much attention I was paying.
Yeah.
I wouldn't get there for tip off. So I would not see where they would put like the starting lineup on the screen. I'd just be like, oh yeah, the Nuggets are on. And then I turn it on and I watch Jokic and they'd be balling. And then I found out this Campazzo dude
is a starter.
And he plays like 30 something minutes and Austin Rivers plays next to him.
He's playing alongside Austin Rivers.
Yeah. That was chilling because, look, I think it will be the Nuggets and probably the Lakers in the second round, right? I think that front line for Denver is asking for a lot out of the Lakers because it's going to require Anthony Davis and LeBron to guard somebody every time down the floor. And they're huge. Like, Porter is your smallest guy on your front line. Porter, Gordon, and Jokic. Like, there's a lot that you got to do with that. They can pull Anthony Davis away from the basket, all kinds of stuff. But man, this Campazzo dude, and it wasn't even one of them situations where I was going to be like, damn, maybe I'm underestimating Frank Campazzo. And then I went and checked out the stats. I was like, man, he averaged 6 points a game. Like, that backcourt, no, that can't happen. It's just hard for me to see them going too deep. Like, they could do it against Portland because as good as Dame is and as good as CJ is, they got to come back and guard somebody. And a great way for Frank Campazzo to look like Dame Lillard is for Dame Lillard to guard him.
And Portland and Denver, in their current states, given the injuries, are just negative images of each other. It's just Portland, it's like, oh my God, look at this backcourt. And right. It's like, wait, who's your front court? Like, hold on a second. Wait a minute. Same thing with Denver. It's like Gordon will guard LeBron, and in LeBron's current state, will give him trouble. Gordon is long, he's strong, he can move, all those things. And Michael Porter Jr. is a phenom and has been since he came out of St. Louis. He just kept hurting himself. And Jokic is a tremendous offensive player.
MVP! Oh, MVP!
He's going to win the MVP. I know he is. I know he's going to win the MVP. I'm very happy for you. It's, you know, I'm happy. You don't want to know something, and we don't have to deep dive into this, but after I said, you know, he's going to go down as career-wise the worst MVP since Dave Cowens, Broussard didn't mean to do this. And that was, we were excluding Derrick Rose. We were just like, take Derrick Rose out of it. And Broussard was like, I don't know, Nick. He's like, you've got Cowens, you've got Walton, Nash too, and then Jokic. And I'm like, man, good thing Larry Bird won some MVPs or else that list is not looking. That is not what you were trying to do there. But listen, he's an excellent player, which is why I thought he was a top three MVP candidate. But I also don't think that they can beat the Lakers in a seven-game series. And I don't know if they think they can beat the Lakers in a seven-game series.
I think that's interesting, and it just really comes down to, as we now get to your beloved Lakers, how that ankle is going to hold up for LeBron as this goes. Like, because that was the thing. Like, when he said the thing about, I may never be 100% for the rest of my career, yeah, probably being a little LeBron dramatic, also probably telling the truth. Like, a high ankle sprain is a monster, and this dude is 36 years old. Like, there's a lot of things there to consider. And so, how's this going to go playing every other night? Like, what is going to be the wear and tear, and how does he ultimately hold up? But, like, as the Lakers' backcourt isn't great, but Denver doesn't have anybody that can stay in front of Schroeder, nor do they have anybody that can do anything once he gets past those guys. Like, this is not a team with rim protectors. Like, Jokic, better defensive player than he gets credit for, but he's not protecting the rim. That's not what you're getting out of him. And so they're going to wind up having problems. And now the Lakers, I mean, Chris Paul with a bad arm, if it's as bad as it appears to be, then I think Phoenix is cooked.
They're cooked. I obviously don't ever talk about my life playing sports because it ended in high school and we're talking about pro sports. But the injury Chris Paul suffered is the injury I suffered in high school, which is, I don't know why they're not calling it this. It's a subluxation of his shoulder, a partial dislocation that came back in. I ended up, after it happened, once it happened once to me, happened three more times my senior year playing basketball, and then I had to have my shoulder operated on. When that happens, you can't raise your arm up the way you want to. So that's why when he's shooting, you're seeing him like almost shot put it. You don't have any strength in the ball and socket. You can't move your arm the way you want to. He's got no shot at being Chris Paul. It's a shame. It makes me sad for him, and maybe the series would have been different. I thought the Lakers' toughest series was going to be round one against the Suns. And I thought that Utah or the Clippers or Denver or Portland weren't going to be able to give them as much trouble as the Suns. But now that they've taken the Suns' punch, they've taken home court. DeAndre Ayton's 21 of 24 from the field in this series. I think that's going to regress to the mean. They either won't play Chris Paul, which is going to ruin their ability in these late game situations like what happened last night, or if they will play him, the Lakers just aren't going to guard him. And then you can focus on Booker. And so I just think the Suns are in a really tough spot. And I feel badly for Chris. This is why Chris Paul isn't one of the 10 greatest players ever, right? Like, it's because his body hasn't held up the way he wants it to. And it's very hard when you're my size. Yeah. Chris Paul's my, you know what I mean? He's demonstrably shorter than you. I am a hair above 6 feet tall. That's hard. Like, it's like really, really hard. And by the way, not that this is what we need to focus on, it gives you an added appreciation for the original Isaiah Thomas.
That's the big one. Boy, Vinny cussed me out one day where I said I had Chris Paul over Isaiah Thomas. Because Chris Paul, by advanced metrics and regular season and all that stuff, is like a top five all-time NBA player. Like, if you ever get a chance to go look it up, he has such an impact on winning basketball. But the playoffs are a different animal. And then this last, was it like 7 years? He's basically gotten hurt one way or another. And a lot of it has been bad luck type of injury. But he's basically gotten hurt every year in the playoffs since something like 2014. A guy that size generally just can't control a game in the way that he controls it in the regular season, which is what makes him valuable by the time the postseason comes around. Now, I look at the Lakers, and my thing with the Lakers is, and what would worry me most about them is, you can't expect Anthony Davis to shoot like he did in the bubble, which means that he is going to have to stop acting like he's light in the ass, and he's going to have to get some buckets going forward. He is far too willing to go backward. Like, I had people get mad at me last year because I said P.J. Tucker was going to give him some long nights because P.J. was muscling him. But Anthony Davis went and stepped outside and had the best shooting run of his life. Unless he's going to do that again, he's going to have to start going forward, especially since this isn't a situation for the Lakers where they can just look at Anthony Davis and say, yo, it'd be great if you gave us 30 tonight. No, we're going to need you to kind of give us 30 every night.
That's right, if and when LeBron gets right. And so AD, this sounds simple, but it's, I think, obviously true. Everyone talks about that 8 inches he grew over the summer one year, right? In high school, when he went from being a point guard to being he went from 6'2 to 6'10, like in a summer. He still wants to be the perimeter guy. That's why he doesn't want to play center. That's why they have to play these lane-clogging lineups. And that's why it seems like it's at times pulling teeth to get him to just physically dominate a guy down low. It's not what he wants to do. To his credit, in the playoffs last year, yes, he did shoot the ball well. He also, when needed, went down on the block. They played him at 5, and they crushed people with that lineup. I thought they were going to go to the AD at 5 lineup to start yesterday's game. Instead, they kept the exact same starting lineup. Drummond played really well, and then they gave Gasol some minutes, and Gasol's actually way better for the Lakers' offense. He just can't move his feet on defense and, like, can't move at all in that side of the ball. But, yeah, they are going to need Anthony Davis. After they won the title last year, Bo, and people were like, man, can LeBron get to 6 rings? The thought process behind that was, well, if Anthony Davis is an MVP candidate next year, that he can. And instead, Anthony Davis had his worst year since his rookie season. They're going to need a lot more performances like the one they got last night.
Yeah, like for LeBron to get to 6 rings would require kind of how Kareem got to 6 rings, right? Now, that's granted, right. 5 of those were with Magic, so that's a different situation. But Kareem was the best player on the next guy comes and then helps elevate you to get to the next place. Now, I haven't talked to you too much about the Nets in the course of all of this that's going on. I think they're going to lose in the second round. And then I watched them last night, and I'm like, damn, they look really hard to beat. But I think they're going to lose in the second round.
So I also think they're going to lose in the second round. And even if they don't lose in the second round, I think the second round series is going to cost them the title. Similar to how the OKC series against the Warriors took enough out of them that LeBron then finished them off. And I think the single most egregious coaching decision made all year was when Philly Brooklyn were playing each other for the third time. Brooklyn had a game against Minnesota and then Philly on back-to-back nights. It was like a Tuesday, Wednesday. On Sunday, they had lost to the Lakers. Nash knew he could only play KD one of those games. and he opted to play him against Minnesota. And he said, because I felt like we needed to get over the Lakers loss. So then he didn't play him against Philly. And then if you remember that game, that's the game Philly was crushing them. They got it all the way down to like six in the fourth quarter, and he didn't put Kyrie back in. He's let Kyrie stay on the bench. Philly ended up winning. That was the difference between the one and the two seed. And that's the difference between getting the Hawks or the Knicks in round two or getting Milwaukee. And Milwaukee is not the same old Milwaukee because Drew Holiday ain't no damn Eric Bledsoe. When you watch the Nets, yes, they look awesome when they're clicking. They are also oddly reliant on Blake Griffin. Now, Blake's been great for them, like to his credit. Defense maybe doesn't matter as much as it used to. It has to matter somewhat. And I just don't think you can win four playoff rounds playing defense. I know they've played well. They've looked like a good defensive team against Boston, but Boston's terrible. Boston is running post-up plays for Jabari Parker. Like, what? I just think they've got a brutal second round. And then if they get there, a brutal third round against Philly. Because what Philly has, it's like, oh, I can credibly see how you're going to guard all these guys. Like, you're going to put Ben on James. You're going to put Tybalt when he's out there, who's one of the best defensive guards in basketball, on Kyrie. Listen, you're just going to take your medicine with KD. And Milwaukee's going to be – Drew Holiday will be more important than Kyrie Irving in that series.
Well, that's the thing for me about Milwaukee. Their three best players are their three best defenders, and they all are the right guys to defend somebody on the other team. Like, Giannis can't defend Durant all night, right? But he can defend Durant. Drew Holiday is going to be the guy that's on Kyrie Irving. And then Chris Middleton, I think, can do a decent job on James Harden, and they can go from there. Because I'm right there with you. I think people misunderstand. This is not the same roster that Milwaukee has tried it out there before. Hell, it wasn't the same roster they tried it out there, if for no other reason than Brook Lopez, who just changes his identity every season, decided to go back to being big man Brook Lopez.
Right. And here's the other thing with Milwaukee. For minutes, for sections of games, you can put Giannis on Harden and put PJ Tucker on Durant.
Yeah.
Because he's done that before. Yeah, it's not like you shut him down, but you're just going to come out of that series, if you win it, beat up. Like, that is a tough team and a physical team, and Giannis is averaging 40 against them this year.
Yeah, I want to see how the Nets look on the road, and the reason I ask that is, obviously, I don't think that playing on the road is going to, like, shake up Kyrie and Durant and Harden, but they got to get some points out of these other dudes, and they got a bunch of other dudes who really ain't got that much experience necessarily, you know, like the Joe Harrises of the world.
And Landry Shamet's experience is bad.
Yeah,
he has
experience,
but it's bad experience.
Yeah, but those guys are going to have to hit shots when they play on the road. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a big thing I think it's going to come down to. They're going to have to hit shots. And I don't know how much they can reasonably get out of those other guys. And with Milwaukee, the point I made about Milwaukee was when these teams stopped Milwaukee the last couple of years, and don't forget, they were obliterating Toronto until they weren't, right?
Yep.
You ain't just going to shut Giannis down by trying hard. It takes a full-on scheme to shut that dude down. And I have no reason to believe the Nets got that.
And it wasn't just scheme. Toronto had peak Kawhi Leonard, and Miami has Bam.
Right.
Like, two guys uniquely suited to give Giannis trouble. So it's not just, oh, everyone's like, build a wall. Teams try to build the wall in the regular season, but they don't have a defensive player of the year to do it. And so that is the problem for Brooklyn. And the one other problem, we're two games in and they're playing a terrible Boston team. It is still the playoffs, and that is still James Harden.
Yes.
Like, there's no reason to doubt KD in any facet at any time. Kyrie had some really rough playoff moments, also some amazing playoff moments. So I'll say I have not just the shot, but he had a 40-point game before the shot. Like, and so give Kyrie, say, we know what we're going to get from him. Harden has not had a start-to-finish good playoff run ever. Ever. Not yet. And so now maybe the time off actually helps him. Maybe it was such a high usage and so much workload in Houston he was wearing down. But it also felt to me like Harden got a little tight and got a little, maybe just having Kevin Durant there makes him feel better about everything. There's so much less pressure on him. But we still need to see that.
Yeah, well, I still need to see some for Philly, too, because I got to say, granted, I think we've seen one game of that series so far, but the Wizards looked a lot better against them than I would have expected. And I think that Philly roster still has holes. And it's Ben Simmons, man. You got to shoot the ball sometimes, one would think, but it's not going to happen. Like, he's not going to do it. We get that. What I want to see, my thing with Embiid in previous years had always been it took him too long to make a move. Right. Like when the ball got to him, if you had an Aaron Baines or a Daniel Tice or just some big solid dude, all you had to do was lean on Embiid because it wasn't like catch the ball, take a dribble, don't have it, pass it back out, get it again, take it to the rack. That wasn't what he was doing. This year, however, where he has looked like had a absolutely dominating season, he's done a lot more of that. But are we at the point, can a post center carry a team to the finals? Because this would be wild old school. It is centered around his defense protecting the rim and him getting the ball in the post. Can you get a team to the NBA finals this way? Will be very interesting to see.
So here's the other thing to watch next time you watch Philly. Of all the contenders, end of quarters, like just take note of what the score of these games is with 90 seconds left in the quarter and then see how it finishes. And in playoff games, that kills you. So like that concerns me. What Philly has going for them is this, and this is the value of the one seed. To get to the finals, they only have to win one series. Like, that's valuable. Milwaukee, to get to the finals, has to win three. Because I know they're blowing Miami out, but Miami's not a team you can just cross off. And by the way, if Milwaukee had lost game one, I think that whole series potentially goes down a different road. Brooklyn, to get to the finals, has to win two series. Philly, I do not think it is possible for them to lose to the Wizards in a seven-game series.
No.
And I do not think it is possible for them to lose to the Knicks or the Hawks. So now you want to look good. You don't want to get hurt. But that is such an edge when the two teams you're competing with, it's not quite like having a bye in the NFL playoffs. But the advantage of the bye isn't just the rest and all those things. It's the instead of there being a 20% chance of you not moving on, it's 0%. And that, to me, is the position Philly's in.
All this time, man, we still ain't got around to the damn Utah Jazz. Like, I don't know what they got to do to make anybody actually legitimately care.
Well, I'll tell you something. Do you want to know? I haven't said this on any platform, so you're going to be the first.
Woo!
How about this? This is like such a multi-level prediction. If they lose this series, I think next year, Donovan Mitchell will play for the Thunder.
The Thunder?
Yeah. Because they have all those picks that they got to start trading. And if you're Utah, Donovan Mitchell, I obviously am not doing any of the reporting on this, but Wendy, obviously you know well, he's reporting on this. Donovan is pissed. And like there is a real, now this is pure reckless speculation. But I think what happened with that ankle in game one was because he was rehabbing on his own.
Right.
I think the team was angry. And I think the team was not 100% comfortable with his rehab. They thought he was going to play. I think it was a punishment, and they thought they could get away with it because they were going to beat Memphis anyway. And it blew up on him because it makes no sense to me how he could be ruled out hours before game one, but ruled in for game two hours after the game.
Right.
Like how can you recover and be evaluated in that 12-hour span? So the point I'm making is if they lose this series, I think that relationship might be fractured. And then you look around like, because his extension kicks in next year. He's got 4 years left with Utah starting next year. And I feel like Sam Presti's like, oh, okay, maybe us. We've got all these picks.
Man, you know how mad I would be if it was like, finally, I'm leaving Utah. And I can't, like, I don't even think you can get a direct flight between them two places.
Getting
like,
traded from Green Bay to Buffalo in the NFL.
Yeah, like, what are we doing? Like, are you serious? I'd be so mad. But I do agree with you. Because normally, a situation like this is the team is trying to make the player play when the player does not want to. Right. This is such a wild inversion of this because in theory, you would think that the Jazz absolutely want him out there because it's the playoffs, so forth and so on. That's why I think what you're saying makes a whole lot of sense, because for people who don't know, apparently his rehab wasn't going well. And then he went and got his own guys.
Yep.
And then the rehab got better. And so all the players on the Jazz thought that he was going to play game one because he'd gone through workouts and all this stuff and everything looked like it was cracking. And then all of a sudden they decide he's not playing the game. And now he's super salty about that fact. If they mess this up with him, like, they're a team that can't ever afford to have their star player think anything other than but the world. They need to love on all those guys. Like Oklahoma City, the one thing that's clear about them, they got a place that we say don't nobody want to go to, but everybody has, like, guys stay. Russell Westbrook was down to stay. Paul George was down to stay. Kevin Durant, I just think, wanted to do something different, but it wasn't because he had an aversion to being in Oklahoma City. They seem to treat their players right. Utah has to treat their players the bestest.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And here's the other thing. Everyone forgets it. Last year, Utah blew a 3-1 lead, right? Mm-hmm. They did that before the Clippers did it. This year, Conley's there. Their team's there. If they end up losing in round one, it's not just like, okay, Donovan's mad at us and it's bad. It's that, what are we doing here? Like, this is Gobert and Donovan are not going to be good enough for us to get anywhere close to where we need to go. So I just think there's a lot on the board there that makes it very interesting.
Yo, this would be so much more of a juicy, messy A1 story if they played in pretty much any other city in America. Right. I say this, man, the Mountain Time Zone, what happens there, we just don't think. Like, we think about the Pacific. It's not just because it's later, right? Because we talk about what happens with the California teams. We talk about Dame Lillard. Denver, Utah, Phoenix. I don't know what you got to do over there to make people really pay attention, but one of the young stars in the league is beefing with his organization going into the playoffs after they had to smooth it over, after his man may or may not have given him the cooties last year.
Was patient zero. And they're the one seed.
Yes.
I mean, LeBron got it right at the All-Star draft. He's like, ain't none of us play with Utah in the video game. None of us like, and it's right. While they have had great players, Donovan is the most exciting, really good player they've had in my lifetime. You know what I mean? Like, Darren Williams wasn't, I mean, he was very good, but not that exciting. Obviously, Malone and Stockton, not exciting. So, yeah, you need to keep Donovan happy. And he right now, listen, they blow out Memphis tonight and Donovan, me talking to them losing in round one is highly improbable. Like, Memphis, I like what Ja's done, and Dylan Brooks is a very good story. And Jaren Jackson Jr., the discrepancy between how his shot looks it should be and the percentage it goes in is shocking. Every time he shoots, I'm like, why is he shooting? It's like, oh, because he's 40% from three. So I like what they're building in Memphis, but Memphis shouldn't actually have a real chance of winning this series. But if they do, I think everything is on the board for Utah.
I agree. And let me tell you something that's interesting about that video game point that LeBron made, and I really hadn't thought about it until right now. Now, you are a little younger than me, so you remember NBA Jam. But I don't think that you were at the point where when it was an arcade phenomenon that you was out there with us, because I was like 12, 13 when that happened, right?
And yeah.
We all, you know, got your quarter on there and everything else to play.
Of course.
NBA Jam is a 2-on-2 game. The most vaunted pair of players in the NBA as a pair, other than Jordan Pippen, was Stockton Malone. And even in a game where you only had two players.
Nobody's picking
Stockton and Malone.
Even in a game where you only have two players and one of the most valuable things you can do with the ball is throw elbows,
yes,
which is what Stockton actually did in real life, still nobody was picking
right up. Right. Shoot threes, throw elbows. You got John Stockton and Karl Malone. Nobody ever wanted to play with them. And they was on TV all the time, too. And it's not just the video game. Nobody, not even white folks, man. Nobody grew up rooting for the Utah Jazz. Everybody I know who is a Utah Jazz fan is Mormon. And I say that because I don't know anybody who's actually from Utah. I've met Phoenix Suns fans. I've met fans of all kinds of weird teams at weird points. The Jazz have never had one player that anybody wanted to root for from out of town. Even Donovan Mitchell can't overcome that.
Can you imagine for Donovan the difference right before a max contract kicks in? If it's like, listen, we've got two offers from teams with a bunch of picks. You're either going to live in Houston or you're going to live in Oklahoma City, buddy. We're not sure yet. Like, if you're Donovan, are you, like, offering to shave some millions off your salary just to get sent to Houston? Like, what are you doing in that? I guess the one other spot, oh, I forgot, this is the other team with picks, is New Orleans.
I was about to say, and that could be interesting because Zion is as advertised. It's been under the radar a bit, but he's as good as you could hope, and they could pull that off.
So maybe, you know what? Maybe that, and it might be that Oklahoma City is like, you know what? We actually want to be the terrible for another year. They didn't get a great pick of their own last year. So New Orleans might be like, we need to win right now. We've got a guy that's an All-NBA guy. I just think it's on the board. I just think if they lose to the Grizzlies, it's on the board. Hey, let me ask you one question before we go. Let's assume the Jazz win. And let's also assume Dallas ends up finishing off the Clippers because we both think they will. Who do you like in that series?
I have no idea. I have, like, I am a big believer in what Rudy Gobert can do for you. And I do think that having him in the paint changes the Luka calculus greatly.
Oh, well, that'd be interesting because it would need to.
And I also feel like Utah has two guys that I feel good about getting their own shots. And Dallas has one.
Yeah, that's true too. I think I would probably go with Luka, but it would be very interesting to see what Gobert, he obviously wouldn't be guarding Luka one-on-one, but what having him there would do, how it would change Luka's game. Because to bring us back full circle to my point about Luka and really your point, which is while the Clippers have all these wings, they don't have a single rim protector. So Luka's had all this success in his playoff career statistically, but never against a team with even a passable center. So, that, I mean, I think that's the series we're going to get. I think we're going to get Denver against the Lakers and Mavs against the Jazz. And I think it'll be both wild fun.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you saw that 38 the Jokic put up the other night.
I know.
Listen, I know. That's great. I know. No. Here's what I say the problem is, and I don't blame you on this. Every time he put up a three, I'm like, are you in the NBA? Oh, it went in again.
It went in, and it didn't even touch. Not only did it not touch the rim, it didn't even touch, like, the beginning of the net. It just splashes right down. He shoots it from his ears while getting 3 inches off the ground, and it goes straight in like it's a carnival shot.
I just don't understand anybody being wild about Luka and not being wild about Jokic. Like, Jokic, everything is just like, I can't believe what I'm watching. This is incredible stuff.
Maybe it's my just pro-Slovenian bias. I just love Luka. Just love him so much.
I'm just telling you, when it comes back around, and don't let the Nuggets mess around and beat the Lakers, boy. Your bitch is going to be a war zone.
No, I can't deal with it. I can't even consider it, Bo. I don't even want to consider it.
That is Nick Wright. Check him out. First things first, 7:30, 9:30. FS1. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassay and Tony Colletti, you handle things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.